You'll be swell, you'll be great, gonna have the whole world on a plate, starting here, starting now, honey, everything's coming up roses.
He shaves the faces of gentlemen who never thereafter were heard of again.
He trod a path that few have trod, 'tis Sweeney Todd. The demon barber of Fleet Street.
Time together with time to spare. Time to learn. Time to care. Someday, somewhere, we'll find the new way of living.
Don't you laugh us? My fault, I fear. I thought that you'd want what I want. Sorry, my dear. But where are the clowns?
Okay, that was sending the clowns there. He's already here, as you might say. So that, well, you haven't tuned to the wrong station. That was a montage of Everything's Coming Up Roses from Gypsy. That was Ethel Merman singing that. The Ballad of Sweeney Todd from Sweeney Todd. Somewhere from West Side Story. And Sending the Clowns from A Little Night Music. And all, of course, the work of composer and Broadway legend Stephen Sondheim, who died early on Friday, aged 91. And I'm joined now by Aidan Gormley, presenter of Movies and Musicals on Lyric FM, and Stephen Falloon, the manager of the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, to talk about Sondheim for a little while. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Stephen, people might know a lot about him, but they will have heard of him and been aware of him and everything. He was kind of a huge cultural figure of what you might call the American century, wasn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, he sort of redefined what a musical could be, you know, and some of the things that he wrote. And then also, like, he wrote Company, Follies, Little Night Music, Sweeney Todd, all brilliant and very complex and nuanced musicals that really just redefined what the genre is. But then also, in the sort of, he wrote West Side Story, the lyrics to West Side Story, which, you know, he wrote it in 1957, 64 years ago. And like 64 years ago, we're preparing for Steven Spielberg's new film version of West Side Story, which is coming out in Friday week. And he's still such a cultural icon.
Yeah. And Aidan, I know you were a huge fan, and you actually really are very upset about his death, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, the news broke on Friday night, and well, you know yourself, Brendan, when you're dealing with a live show, I did my 3-hour show ready to go yesterday, and it was suddenly rip that one up and let's start from scratch, and it was 3 hours of Sondheim. And you know, it was interesting initially when I came in yesterday morning. I thought, okay, maybe I'll do an hour, and I had, you know, posted, and I was keeping an eye on social media going, do people want 3 hours of Sondheim? It became very clear that they did. I don't know when I've had a reaction to a programme. He's so relevant. And what I loved was, sad as I was that he had died, I felt, age 91, he knew he was loved and appreciated. You know, he's had a theatre named after him in London and in New York. He was at one of his own musicals, Company, the Broadway Revival, just a week before he died. He got a standing ovation as he entered. So I'm sort of glad he died with that recognition.
Yeah, and he hadn't been ill, and it sounded like he did have a nice time towards the end. He had celebrated Thanksgiving with friends and everything.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it is, I suppose, a nice way to go. It was Thanksgiving and he died suddenly and he hadn't been ill or anything. So,
why was he so important to you, Aidan? What's his greatness?
His greatness is that he moves you with his songs. It, you know, whether it's to make you laugh or to make you cry, he just... There was somebody who put it very well, you know, that, you know, Sondheim didn't, I never met Sondheim, but he knew me. It's like he knew how to write a song. I mean, Stephen spoke there about how he revolutionised musicals. He was a master of melody and of lyric. I mean, I just grew up, obviously, with West Side Story, started going to his musicals. And he was just so original. If you look at the subject matter, I mean, he turned the unlikeliest of subjects into entertainment. If we think of the murderous barber in Sweeney Todd, you know, a pointless painting by Georges Seurat on Sunday in the Park with George, he spoke in assassins giving voice to the men and women who killed or tried to kill American presidents. So he redefined the Broadway musical form, but he gave us glorious melodies with lyrics that are just indeed so clever. The man himself wrote two books about them.
Yeah, and he was a kind of, he was an intellectual, wasn't he, and a wordsmith, and I think he thought deeply about things. He was a lovely talker, so we got some clips of him talking. So in this clip here, he's talking about developing the character before he sits down to write.
I'm trying to imagine what it is to be able to sit down and write. It's a very short road from the pinch and the punch to the punch and the pouch and the pension. Mm. Does it make you laugh?
Yeah, once I got the idea of that song. Well, it's true of all the songs I write, particularly when they're very verbal songs. You make lists, is what you do. And you start getting into the character. It's always about getting into the character. And you start to make lists of what she would talk about. And you suddenly find that certain words, either if they don't rhyme with each other, relate to each other. And things concatenate. It's very much about serendipity. It's a very much, oh, I didn't think. Pinch, paunch, pension. Once you get the idea of, let's say, jowls, and you think of pouch, you say, wait a minute, those, you know, that maybe we can make something out of the similarity of those sounds. So then you think, all right, let's go to the thesaurus and look up all the words that begin with P and have a CH sound in them.
Go to the thesaurus?
Oh, the thesaurus, I have the most well-thumbed thesaurus and rhyming dictionary. Oh, this whole thing, this mystique about not using reference books is nonsense. Why should you have to sit there for 5 days and try to think of all the words that begin with P that have a CH when you've got a nice book that gives you all the words?
Okay, that wasn't quite the clip I had in mind, but that clip, Stephen, it was an art form, as he saw it, putting the words over the music, and also because you had to tell the story with the words, so people had to be able to follow it, didn't they? So it's a particular thing.
Totally, and he learned that from, so he was, his mentor in his early life was Oscar Hammerstein, one part of Rodgers and Hammerstein, who wrote Sound of Music, Carousel and South Pacific, a great musical writer in himself, and he really taught him that, you know, to really develop a story, that when you're singing a song, it's not just about, you know, singing a song, but it's rather giving the character, the actor, a chance to go into the inner monologue to actually really develop what that character is feeling, which really adds another complexity to the story. And he became an absolute genius in that. When you look at Company, which is the great anti-romantic comedy, West Side Story, Gypsy, all of his musicals really kept with that thought of, like, that character, the person that's singing is telling something about themselves that the audience will resonate with, and it will bring the story to a new level.
Yeah, I was reading, he wrote these two books reflecting, but there was a lot of mea culpa in it that, like, he was pointing out where little things like that, in somewhere, there's a place for us, that the shouldn't have been the dominant note.
I read that too, yeah. And I'm like going, God, you're awful self-critical, Stephen. Jeez, you're a genius, and your work is absolutely brilliant. But he was, and it is brilliant reading that, because it is the, you know, when you read his book, it is the work of a genius that he is so self-reflective and critical. Like, it's to me, it's kind of mad.
He's still on about it to himself.
It's so true, though. Yeah. And he wasn't afraid to say when he made a mistake. I mean, let's face it, you know, just to be clear, it was not all plain sailing. His musical Anyone Can Whistle in 1964 was a 9-performance flop. You know, Angela Lansbury's first stage role, Merrily We Roll Along, which is now much loved, 16 performances in 1981, it closed. And sometimes it needed different casting, sometimes it needed more work put on it. But Sondheim said, if people have split views about your work, I think it's flattering. I'd rather have them feel something about it than dismiss it. And he just loved theatre. He said, you know, when the audience comes in, it changes the temperature to what you've written. So he got out there and tried it.
And there's a great documentary, sorry, just on on Merrily Roll Along on Netflix called The Best Worst Thing That Could Happen, which actually looks back at the process. These young actors who they thought were getting their massive big break to star in a new Sondheim musical.
Yeah.
One of them is actually Jason Alexander, who went on to play George in Seinfeld. Yeah. And it's a brilliant documentary that really looks at the process of trying to write and devise a musical theatre piece, and it's fascinating.
And are we back to then, Stephen, the William Goldman thing, no one knows anything? So even Sondheim, they had to put like probably millions these days into yeah. developing the musical, and they literally kind of don't know until it actually gets out there on stage and gets received that whether it's a go or not.
As I always say, there is no great mathematical equation that equals a musical theatre hit. You know, it's not like 1 + 1 = 2, therefore that's it. It's because every great musical writer, including Lloyd Webber, just everyone has had a flop in their time, and that's just the nature of the business. It's just the beauty and power of musical theatre that, unfortunately, for every work of genius you come up with, there's something that's not going to resonate or connect as well.
But I suppose Aideen as well, he was no Lloyd Webber in a sense that it was much darker and more challenging and more kind of brooding a lot of it, wasn't it? So he probably took more chances, did he, with musicals?
Yeah, you know, and sometimes people used to, I mean, I certainly when I started playing Sondheim on air over 20 years ago, it seemed a bit niche, it seemed a bit avant-garde, and then bit by bit people got it a bit more, because some people would think, like, you might come out of an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical and you're humming the song, you might not come out of a Sondheim musical humming the song, but boy, you'll want to go back and listen to it again, and that is the difference, you know, you just want to keep listening and keep working it out. And it should be said as well, a lot of people, you know, we were all in tears with some of the songs listening to Sondheim over the last 24 hours, but he had a great sense of humour, Brendan, as well. You know, some of the songs are really, really funny. Songs like I'm Still Here, which is the song of the survivor, sung by the likes of Elaine Stritch, Not Getting Married Today from Company, about this bride having a nervous breakdown. So there's a lot of variety there to enjoy.
Yeah. And is there a sense, Stephen, that I don't want to say that musicals tended to be old-fashioned or backward-looking, and obviously, like, you know, the musical theatre has come on a lot in recent times into the Book of Mormon, which Yvonne at the moment, and all that kind of thing. But my sense was always that Sondheim, did he make it more of a modern kind of an art form?
Absolutely, definitely. He just brought it to a new level. As Aideen said earlier, he wasn't afraid to tackle themes that had never been done in musical theatre before and present them in a very interesting and challenging way. I think, you know, the thing about him is that, you know, the numbers aren't catchy. The words are rich. They're very simple and they really connect, but they are complex. And it's only really afterwards, when you go and see a Sondheim musical, that you actually, it sits with you for days and that you actually come to terms with what it was and what you've seen. It really challenges you in a way that musical theatre hadn't done before. And that's his great legacy. And also, his great legacy is like Lin-Manuel Miranda, the director of Hamilton, and the new film Tick, Tick, Boom, Boom on Netflix. Sondheim was his mentor and taught him, Miranda said, taught him everything I know. And so his legacy will just live on forever and ever.
Okay, so we go back to that clip that I meant to play the first time. And this is, I think it speaks into the fact that, like, he wasn't writing kind of, you know, pretty musicals that were surface level thing. This is him, and he talks about developing the character before he writes.
I've often used the image that, you know, if you ask me to write a love song, I don't know what to write. But if you say, now write me a love song about a girl who's just been jilted by a guy, and she comes into a bar and she's in a red dress and she orders a grasshopper, that I can write, because you've started to characterize and give me specifics to write about. Now I know there's a drink to write about, there's a bar to write about, there's a dress to write about. Why did she choose that dress? Who is the guy who jilted her? But say, write me a torch song. What kind of torch song do you want, you know?
So, Aideen, Stephen mentioned earlier about the kind of apprenticeship with Oscar Hammerstein. So that's an interesting kind of story. Tell us how that came about.
Well, his parents divorced when he was 10, and it just so happened that the Hammerstein family lived across the way. So Oscar Hammerstein, as Stephen mentioned, was the lyricist of Rodgers and Hammerstein of Carousel, Oklahoma, of Sound of Music. And he just mentored him. Sondheim said, you know, if Oscar happened to have been a plumber or a doctor, I might have ended up being a plumber or a doctor. But I just followed what he did. But he really mentored him. He absolutely adored him. And it led the way as a lyricist initially for West Side Story and Gypsy, and then he got to write the melodies as well, and was, you know, excellent at both. And what a gorgeous thing about him in terms of his legacy is he so appreciated what Oscar Hammerstein gave to him that he wanted to pass that on, you know, as Stephen mentioned there, on to Lin-Manuel Miranda. But I saw so many people on social media yesterday noting letters or cards they received from Sondheim. Might have just been a couple of lines, really enjoyed your performance, your work was very impressive, But, you know, if you have Stephen Sondheim's signature at the bottom of that, he really took the trouble to do that, which made a lot of people very happy.
Yeah. And on the that kind of being taken under the wing of the Hammersteins, he was a complex kind of guy. His relationship with his mother, Stephen, was... I don't know, what would we say nowadays? Toxic? Was she a toxic person?
Incredibly dark. I mean, she had to go undertake some very drastic surgery in her later life, and she wrote a note to Stephen which said, my only regret in life is giving you birth.
Giving birth to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's an incredible thing to say to your son, but he still remained very close to her and still bought her property and was, you know, after she came out of the operation and throughout her later life, he was there for her. But it's an incredible thing to say to your son. So there was an incredible darkness and, yes, toxicity in their relationship.
And Aideen, was that at the heart of him in a sense, at his complexity?
I think so. I think he constantly went back to human relationships, and he understood them, but questioned them constantly. And that you'll see that, you know. I mean, if you look at a song like "Losing My Mind," I mean, it's an absolute heartbreaking song of lost love, of breakup, and then you've a song of survival like "I'm Still Here." So he's constantly connecting character, humour, deep emotion.
And was he a happy person, Aideen? Did he end up happy in his life?
He did. You know, he didn't find love until his 60s. So there's hope for us all.
He was romantically malnourished.
Yes. But no, he just said he was an only child. He was used to being on his own. And suddenly he thought maybe this needs to change. So, yeah, he married, and he was very happy. So, again, that's lovely.
Yeah, he married in 2017. At the ripe old age of 87,
he decided
to walk down the aisle.
Oh, geez, there's hope for everyone. Yeah, he wrote about parents and children a lot, I think, but he did not have children himself. And there's a quick little nice clip here of Diane Sawyer asking him, did he want children?
Did you want them, children?
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't have any. Yeah, I am. But art is the other way of having children, teaching. I believe that very firmly.
There you go. Art is the other way. Did you ever meet him, Aideen?
I did. I slightly stalked him. The year of his 80th birthday in 2010, he was appearing at a lot of these birthday concerts.
He was still a single man at that point.
Yes, it should be noted. But there was a concert in the Royal Albert Hall, but I actually met him in the Lincoln Center in New York, an incredible concert with an array of stars in the New York Phil. And you know, one of those concerts where you just don't want it to end. And I sort of was hanging around a bit afterwards, and I realized there was a gala dinner happening upstairs, and I suddenly spotted him. And you know, I had that typical Irish thing that we do of maybe I shouldn't bother the celebrity and maybe I'll just go home. And I thankfully got over that very quickly. Look, I just went over to him. I'm really glad I did. I said I was over from Ireland, and I just thanked him for the music. And he was really smiley and gracious, which is what most people say about him. And what a privilege. I floated away after that.
Yeah, he seemed like a gracious kind of an individual. Stephen, will he be one of the immortals?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There is no doubt about it. I mean, it's as we mourn his loss, we celebrate his legacy, and that legacy will continue for generations to come.
Okay, Stephen Falloon and Aideen Gormley, thank you so much. So we just go into the break with a little bit from West Side Story. This is Maria.
Maria, I've just met a girl named Maria, and suddenly that name will never be the same to me. Maria, I've just kissed a girl named Maria, and suddenly I've found how wonderful a sound can be. Maria, say it loud and there's music.
Email brendan@rte.ie.